both of us were not supposed to be thankful for having made time. However, I guess it's all in the name of having to thank every time we are together. You know how I wish this venue could have been yesterday's venue, and today the exchange for yesterday, because the number that we have today easily could have fitted in yesterday's venue. You agree with me, Dietrich? And yesterday he'd be here. Anyway, that's water under the bridge. We do not complain, we simply just have to comply. That's what the administrators, you know, force us to do. But the riot act has been read yesterday. We may say it in mild terms, but I mean it when I say, if we are forced, or rather confronted, to be in a situation where we are disorganized in a smaller venue, I promise that we will not go into that meeting. Without waste of time, we have a long administrative work to do after the presentation and engagement with the National Agriculture Marketing Council. There are tons and tons of information in front of ourselves. Typically for me, it would have been made more simpler if we were to answer very, very basic questions as to whether work of National Cattle Marketing Council this coming year will have to be measured in accordance with some basic milestones. Because when we receive many of these reports, members, both business plans and strategic plans and HR plans and budget, we literally swim in a lot of confusion at the end, having to miss the points as they relate to the priorities of government. Whether or not your work will help us grow our economy, how? Whether your work will help us grow employment, how? To a point where if there are any specific targets, what your role get to be. Now these are for me the very fundamentals as we move forward, so that we really begin to say to ourselves, let us begin now to think a lot smarter. Think outside this box that we have. The box that we're talking about here is this tons of information. You know, your 3-year strategic plan, your HR plan, your business plan, your budget. That's a box for me. If we are able to say to ourselves, let us for once think outside of that box. If you are able to say, before you dwell on your presentation, what are your 4 areas? Precisely because here we are a group of strategic thinkers. By virtue of you being in such leadership positions, you qualified to be that strategic thinker. By virtue of us being here as members of parliament, we have to be strategic. What I mean by that is that we cannot find ourselves being bogged down by details. We're also not here Granted, those are important areas. But we shouldn't find ourselves bogged down by details in relation to the figures. You know, it was not this debit, it was that debit, you know. Of course, importantly, there also are areas of how many staff members and so on and so forth. What are our strategic areas that we shall have identified ourselves as NAMC? Maybe just before we get to the whole information that is undoubtedly going to confuse a number of us at the end of the day, so that we are able to say at the end of that financial year, 2010-2011, we are able to say to ourselves, let's go back to that history memory lane and be able to say, what were those four strategic areas? They made five. I'm not here talking about the program. I'm talking about the thrust of your strategic areas, that at the end of the day, we shall have achieved A, B, C, D as NAMC. I thought, members, it would be prudent on us if we were to adopt an approach such that at the end of the day, we don't find ourselves bogged down with, you know, this pile of information that is in front of ourselves. I take it that is accepted. That's fine. Okay, in that sense of any, we shall then hand over. Welcome to all of those who just joined us. Sorry to have started earlier. We apologize for future. Okay, thank you. You can just introduce yourself and the team and then take it from there.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the House. My name is Ntombi Msimang. I'm the chairperson of the NAMC. With me, I have the CEO of the NAMC, NAMC's National Agricultural Marketing Council. With me is Ronald Ramabulana, the CEO. Sarah Mulao, our CFO, and we have Billy Murokolo, who heads the marketing unit at the Department of DAF, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. By invitation of the Portfolio Committee, we are going to present our strategic plan, business plan, and we've really sort of lifted from the bigger document what we are about. I'll start by talking, and as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee has said, because of the need to come up with very few strategic areas, and that in that we were led as the NAMC Council and management by what we could glean from the last Likotla. We have already been in discussion with the department. In a few days, the CEO and, you know, through the DG and the other SOEs will actually be aligning the strategic documents that we have with the priority areas, strategic areas of the department. So what the portfolio chair is talking about is what is in progress. If we were coming to present next week, we would have had those four. But I am worried to start talking about the four from the NAMC because already we have a meeting to align this with the department even tomorrow. Yeah, it's actually a meeting that's taking place tomorrow that will be highlighting the priorities and we will be aligning themselves. But that has, it may be, we thought that our presentation should start with collaboration because that is what is the basis of what our government is about. Working together, so that we can achieve more. And we start with saying it's becoming evident that proper implementation of the agricultural sector plan, the Agri-BEE Charter and Government Plan of Action will definitely require greater collaboration between our department, the National Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the provincial governments of agriculture, state-owned entities such as us, civil society organizations.
Just one second, Ms. Ntombi.
Yes.
Is it not possible for NAMC, granted you have a meeting tomorrow and so on, if you did not have those sessions planned for tomorrow, if the department was not able to say, here are the four areas of priority, as the National Agriculture Marketing Council, would you still not be in a position to say, at the end of this financial year, we shall have achieved A, B, C, D, E, without having to take us through the report before, rather, we take us through the presentation?
I think we could, because the NAMC is governed by an Act of Parliament, and the Act underlines access to market for agricultural products. So that is the overall strategic intent of what we do. But under that, we deal with the support for within the budget that we have, and through advising the minister, because the main thing the NAMC does is really to be an advisory entity to the minister. It's to see that under the Act, that access to market is for emerging farmers. That access to market is also done, again, in a collaborative way. We also, this year, have prioritized the trust, which the House is familiar with. That has been quite a hotbed over the years. But since last year, we are working very closely with them. And so that is another area of priority that we are going to have. And is there someone, is the one I'm leaving at? Yes, come in, please.
If I could add, Chair, I think you are correct in saying that every government is concerned about economic growth and growth that creates employment, and to a certain extent also how you could control inflation, and for the NAMC, food inflation becomes a lot more important. So when you go through the presentation, you will find that there are programs that we talk to that talks about how you grow the agricultural sector. For example, we talk about how we plan to use the 1.4 billion rand that is within the various agricultural trusts, as well as the 257 million that we raise every year through statutory measures to fund those activities that will grow the agricultural sector. So we talked that we have a target of how much we want to raise, where we want to spend that money, and what the impact of that will be. And at the end of the year, we measure whether that impact has been achieved or not. We secondly talk about marketing schemes that we have designed and implemented, how much they will cost, what the impact of that will be in terms of empowerment, as well as job creation. You will also find priorities that we talk about that talks to how we will help government understand food inflation. And the unfortunate part about food inflation is we advise as to how government could address it. We don't necessarily have the tools as the NAMC to address it ourselves. But those priorities are there and have been discussed at the strategy document that we will present.
Any comments, ma'am? Are we of the view that you just allow them to go through the presentation? You see, the reason why I'm adopting this approach, members, is that to a large extent, this makes our life easier. In really getting to the thrust of what is expected of an agency of government or a department of government. Because often than not, when having to be taken through these budgets and these trust plans and these many documents, we deal with a lot of unnecessary detail to a point where you miss the issue that really must take us forward. The issue that relates to what is an approach of NAMC with regards to this trust, to a point where you might even wish to say part of your priorities might have suggested change the laws that are governing this trust, so that these trusts are not a law unto themselves. They are controlled, they are managed somewhere. At the end of the day, what they are intended to do, they do. As we speak now, we have a different case altogether about the intention of such trust. Now, for me, those are the kinds of details I thought perhaps we might wish to engage in before there is this elaborate, you know, presentation that we might wish to get. But I guess members here from that, let's take through the presentations and then we deal with the issues, you know, as and when they arise. Imam Mahmoud?
Chairperson, when we met with NAMC last year, it wasn't an event. It wasn't an event. It was the beginning of a 5-year project. And therefore, I would like NAMC to present to us and check if NAMC have implemented the resolutions. The resolutions that we took with them last year. If NAMC has implemented issues that were raised, though, Chairperson, I want to say honestly, there was nothing serious about NAMC. That presentation last year was super. But we need to check if those smaller inquiries that were raised were attended to, because it wasn't an event, it was a program. So we want to see if they are implementing our program as a committee. Thank you.
Bulala, do we have notes on those on the last year's interaction? Sorry? Why?
I don't have access to Maria's emails, so she didn't leave anything.
Chairperson, in today's package that we are going to adopt, NAMC minutes are there, though not compiled the way we discussed them. Chairperson, some of us, we brought our old notebooks, and we are able to take from where we left last year. Thank you.
Okay, maybe that's where we should start, Chairperson Ntombi Msuma, before we go through the presentation, so that we are in sync with whatever we do. The challenge that we have is that in most instances, Whenever we get any such claim, typically those are supposed to be informed by what could have transpired in an annual report presented the previous year. An annual report that shall be indicating to us as to how far did we go. So that when we are to say, here we have now these new plans, they are informed by whatever shall have been looked into the previous annual report. So that we are clear to ourselves that we are not literally starting from scratch as we go forward on any of these things. Say, Mama?
Chairperson, points that were raised in the presentation included the following: key messages influencing NAMC strategy, role of agriculture, NAMC and food price monitoring, global drivers of food price inflation, effects of the food crisis, issues and developments in South Africa, future outlook and policy options, rural food price monitoring, NMEC functions finance through strategy levies, German retailers food bank, South Africa's trade in primary and agricultural products, transformation guidelines, export promotion, financial status and of industry trust, and there were challenges there that were presented to us and also the budget. Thank you very much.
Ms.
Ma? We will take the way that the chair and the member has asked. Our strategic objectives don't really change. And in the presentation, just put them up, Jonas. And then what we will do is the CEO is going to answer by strategic objectives what we have done in the past year, according to, and the four objectives that we have are actually, and they capture most of what has been listed in last year's question. So under strategic objective one is increasing market access, as we said, for all market participants. The promotion of efficiency in the market of agricultural products, optimization of export earnings from agricultural products, and the enhancement of viability of the agricultural sector. The only thing I would add here is, of course, these are not blanket matters. They can look like blanket objectives. We are limited by the Act and by the funds that we have, and also by the fact that most of the time we're advisory. But among the role players that we deal with, like the industry sectors that we deal with, which covers the trust, I think that I will ask the CEO to say, because we have when we brought our strategy document for last year, 2009-2010, we had key performance indicators, we had the achievables, and we had the budget that we had allocated per strategic objectives, and that's what we will be reporting on in our annual report. But I think we can lift those for the sake of the House this morning and just tell you what we have done briefly. Please, Jonathan, just go one by one here.
Chip, I think the first issue that covers both the four strategic objectives, it's that the sense we got, and we had a big debate about this with members, was that there was a view that the Marketing Act is very limiting in terms of what is it that South African agriculture requires. And I will ask Mr. Morokolo to talk to the process as to how far the department is in terms of redrafting the Marketing Act. There was a sense that the way the Act is written doesn't allow South African government to provide the required services that the agriculture deserves in the country. So I'll ask Mr. Morokolo to talk to them, because the process of finalizing the Marketing Act is well advanced, and to be good for members to get a briefing as to how far that is. Part of that process, it's the whole issue in terms of agricultural trust. one of the issues that was raised was that we as government have taken money, state money, put in the trust and gave the trust away. And therefore, most of the trust we have don't necessarily help us in advancing the objectives of government. We have, as indicated, we have gone and seek a legal opinion as to how you could address the question in terms of how do you get some of the trusts changed so that trust can address issues that are important for South Africa. And that legal opinion has gone into feeding into the rewriting of the new Marketing Act. So when Mr. Moroko briefs you as to how far we are, you'll get a sense as to how quickly what you're looking for will be able to be achieved. There was also an issue in terms of the B Section 7 committee, because there was a concern that the B industry, just like other smaller industries, it's going through strain, and we had done work in terms of what are some of the issues that could be done to address challenges that the bee industry is facing. That work has went into feed into the department. There is a team that has been put up to undertake the recommendations that came out of the Section 7 committee. We as the NNC are part of that team to ensure that those recommendations get implemented by industry as well as by the department itself. Then there's a big issue in terms of food inflation, more especially the rural food price monitoring. And in that there was a debate in terms of, one, the quality of data that is coming from rural areas. Number two, rather than producing reports, what else can we as the NNC do to help government understand as to how we will address the problem in terms of food inflation? I'll talk to the first part being the quality of data. If you remember, we used to collect data using extension officers within various provinces. And the quality of data was questionable. We have changed that system and are working with SSA to collect the data. So you'll be able to get data in a lot of rural communities so that you are able to compare food price inflation in various communities rather than in the limited number of communities where you used to collect data. So there's one part in that. We have changed that, and we have a contract with SSA in order to do that. So the quality of data will improve. Number two, yes, and the chairperson was just reminding me that we have gone into taking some of the money that we had to fund the NMC activities in order to fund that function. We spent $2 million on that. And the question just reminded me that we need more money for that. The second bigger component was, why is it that as the NNC we could do to help government understand this issue in terms of how you control food, how you could control food deflation, rather than just publishing documents, and perhaps this requires we're supposed to come to the portfolio committee this week actually to discuss the food cost review. If you follow what is happening in terms with the what is happening at the Competition Commission, you will find that a lot of agricultural companies are organized into associations, and those associations in most cases sit down and work on things related to research, marketing, and in most cases don't necessarily discuss pricing. But most of those associations are being investigated. The poultry industry is a good case in point as we speak. It's happening in the dairy industry, where there might be a view that we should break down some of those associations. That, if you think about it, goes against what we are trying to do with statutory measures, collection of levies, because when people collect levies, they have to be in an association. They get information as to who is producing what, and then people are charged in terms of collection of levies through those groupings. So that has an implication in terms of how the NAC and the structure of agriculture is organized. So we said this the last time when we came to the meeting, chances of us as the NAC or the Department of Agriculture addressing or helping control food inflation, it's not going to happen if we are not addressing the structure of agriculture in South Africa. Number two, if we're not increasing production. We have for a very long time been focusing on farmers when we're trying to address an issue of food price inflation. And we all know that that is not the case. It's other players within the value chain who have a much bigger impact on the price of food. And as long as we don't address the structure of agriculture and the concentration in some of those components of the value chain, we're not going to address the problem of food price inflation. Because a farmer in Limpopo, in a specific community producing mangoes, has no impact on the price of mangoes. It's everybody else in the value chain who has an impact on the price of mangoes. The Marketing Act will help in addressing some of those issues, but it's probably a very small component in addressing the problem in terms of food price inflation. But maybe what I should do before we start presenting the strategy plan is to ask Mr. Morokolo to give you some update as to how far we are as the Department of Agriculture in rewriting the Marketing Act in order for it to do what you are asking for.
Before proceeding, can I make a follow-up here on what the CEO was presenting? Chairperson, I went through the South African Food Court Review of 2008, where you said you interviewed individuals, retailers, and other stakeholders. And you indicated that the problem that makes inflation in the rural areas is because of transport costs, frequency of trips to and from the suppliers, distance from the suppliers. But I want to say this, Chairperson, and I've got a question based on that. To say, presently as we are speaking, there are a lot of spaza shops in the rural areas. And I'm sorry to raise this, I'm not trying to be xenophobic, but the issue is that all spaza shops in our rural areas, they are utilized by the outsiders. Do you really, as NAMC, go and check or do research around those business people, those are many spaza shops? Because truly speaking, they are stripping our people, Mr. Bosman, in the rural areas. A bag of cement is 67 rand. I'm talking from my experience. But they are selling a bag of cement for 100 rand. Some of them are putting them on, head on. They are really not doing good to our people in the rural areas. And I would like to get a report from you to say, in Venda, where you come from, we buy a bag of cement from these spaza shops at 100 rand. What are you doing about that? Thank you.
Okay. If I may, I think, If you go back to 1990, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, if you go back to 1997, we deregulated the agricultural sector. Two of the things that were there before then was single channel marketing and minimum price guarantees. We deregulated the agricultural sector. And what we then said was that the price of a product would be determined by what is available and the number of people who want to buy. So the Marketing Act operate based on those two principles. There is a process in terms of reviewing it. And what we need to debate is, do we want to change the principles or not? One, with that in mind, when we go to rural areas, we look at prices. One, we don't look at who is selling, whether they're South African or not. We don't do that. And so we look at prices of products that have been sold in the country. Number two, we don't necessarily sit down and say, if you are selling a loaf of bread at 10 rand, you are wrong. We highlight that the price of bread in South Africa should be so much, people should be buying bread at this price. But we don't have a right to close it down if you're selling a loaf of bread at 10 rand. I'm just using it as an example. Because the Act doesn't allow us to do that. If something like that happens, I can imagine if Mercedes-Benz starts selling cars at 1 million rand and we want to close them down, it might create a problem. But if that is what you want, we then need to debate the Act and say, how do you want the Act to look like? And once we've debated, and this has been going on for 3 years, 3-4 years, so if we debate the Act and say, this is how we want it to look like, we'll be able to do the work based on the Act you've given us. The one that you've given us at the moment says that the price is determined by the number of people who are selling and number of people who are buying.
Okay, can we allow that to be the last interjection so that we allow the team to present and then we engage later on? Who knows? Some of the issues we might wish to interject on could be issues that are going to be covered. Who knows?
But Chair, I'm not a prophet. I can predict that what I'm going to ask now will never be covered. Chair, my argument is that it is very well to say that the current tool that you have does not allow you to do certain things. But you are an institution that is supposed to be monitoring what is happening on the ground, in addition to your other functions. And when you come across the fact that exorbitant prices are being charged, especially to rural poor, many of whom live on a fixed income, it is your duty to say that this particular Act has the following shortcomings, and these need to be remedied immediately. For example, Chair, if you go to some of these bazaar shops where it's Hobson's Choice, the people have to buy there, otherwise they don't have money for transport to go into the town or the city or wherever. You will pay through your nose for a commodity like, say, a 0.5 liter of cold drink, which you can probably get for 6 rand, 5.99 at Pick and Pay. You will pay there 9 rand, 10 rand, 11 rand. Whereas you could have bought a liter for that price. These are little things, Chairperson, which impact on the disposable income of rural poor. And that is where we need to act. And what I expect from you people is to come forward and say that in doing this retail price monitoring, this is what we found. And let me tell you something else. Many of those bazaar shops are not even registered for VAT. Many of them are not even registered with SARS. And those guys are having a jolly good time. In conclusion, in Bloemfontein, it is said that there are approximately 1,000 bazaar shops, mainly run by, and I'm not being xenophobic, Bangladeshis. And that they have a sort of an tuna that comes and collects from each bazaar shop every Saturday a certain levy. And that levy in total amounts to 1 million rand per week. This is what the guys tell me in Bloemfontein. Now, if these are the things that we are picking up, we expect you people who are supposed to be our eyes and ears to come and tell us that these are the problems and these are the possible solutions. And if need be, we need to rush through legislation as speedily as possible in order to see that every cent our poor people can save is going to be something that will benefit them and their families. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I think we have heard some of the points raised by some of the members. It also must be borne in mind that we are lawmakers. When that amendment comes, it is us who must make that law at the end of the day. Now, the department's role is that of only recommending, crafting into whatever jargon and so on. At the end of the day, it is us who must really begin to say, this is the direction we're taking, this is not the direction we want to take, as you are presenting to us, department. Well, one of the priorities that our own ANC-led government has come up with is that of having to look into seriously rural development. I can imagine a situation where here is a complex set up in the middle of Venda in Kiani. And there you're going to have all these other shops, you know, Pick and Pay, Spa, you name them. And obviously there, you're certainly going to find a serious issue of pricing that is going to affect, by and large, those other shops. Again, the answer belongs to us as to how fast to move in really realizing all these initiatives and priorities that we shall have set for ourselves. But that's a detail that we need to come to after the presentation. Well, what I would propose is to, let's get straight into the presentation. The reason why I wanted us to allow a broader discussion earlier on, as we begin, or rather just before we begin, was to look primarily on the strategic areas that require us to say at the end of the day, these being identified as strategic areas, this is how we're going to move forward, so that we are able to benchmark over and above all these other many details that we are going to come up with in your presentation. The issue of the agricultural sector plan is equally very, very, very critical. But those are the details that will have to come. The floor is yours. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'm going to be very brief. In terms of the status of the review of the Act, we are almost done, and we have submitted the draft proposed amendments to our legal division within the department. And I think the intention from the legal the legal services is to forward it to the state law advisors, just to make sure that you know, the structure and the approach is actually consistent with what you know, normally a statutory instrument should be designed accordingly. But then coming to the specific issues that Honourable Member Abraham raised around the competition issues and you know, other matters that are actually currently not within the ambit of the NMC to regulate, like the chairperson and the CEO have just indicated. So those loopholes, we have just picked them up in terms of areas around competition on food prices, in terms of who regulates and who's got the power and authority to give direction and guidance. That section we have incorporated into the Act around competition issues, how that, you know, the Department of Agriculture, NMC, collaborate with the Competition Commission so that we have this kind of a symbiotic relationship in as far as dealing with food prices concerned. That provision has been, you know, factored into the draft Act. The other issues around the determination of the agricultural tariff policy, which is currently the preserve of the Department of Trade and Industry, we also, you know, consider, you know, including a provision in that respect, so that, you know, as agriculture also has a say and influence on the determination of those kind of things. So I think it's quite a comprehensive review. I was just talking to Mr. Sivifero that there was this request, you know, from the portfolio committee for us to come and present the findings of the marketing review exercise that we have done. And I was just checking with him whether, you know, that request, the submission that we have made to the minister has, you know, found its way, you know, through to, you know, to the portfolio committee. But I think this is a matter that we'll follow up so that we have a very, you know, an open session to come and present to you what we have, you know, found out, and then also harvest some ideas from yourself in terms of in covering some of the issues that you are raising around, you know, legislation, what kind of legislation do we see in place, I mean, around rural development, marketing, and food prices. So I think, Chair, we are seeking a space and a hearing with yourself to come and make a proper presentation around this particular issue. Thank you.
You know, I've just been going through this list of bills to be submitted to Cabinet and Parliament. On agriculture, port and fisheries in the year 2010, we only have marine fisheries bill expected to go to Cabinet 2010 in May, and coming to Parliament 2010 in October. So that's what we're getting from you know, I'm told this document is some secret document, I'm not sure about it. Now, I guess the point you're raising, Minister, is that we need to make our input on this document to prioritize some of those issues like those as a committee. The point is taken. Thanks, CEO. Good.
Thank you, Chair. What I will do is, you have the presentation. I'll skip some of those slides that you could read, and then go to those slides that talk to some of the issues you have raised today. I've skipped the Human Resource Committees, all the committee names of committee members. I've jumped to page 9. One of the things we have prioritized this year is to say that in our view, the way we have supported and developed black farmers has been wrong. We feel that we have as a country gone into providing piecemeal.
Maybe just before you go through, if you could just enlighten us very, 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 extremely, very briefly on one specific matter. I see here you have a council and a whole range of other committees. The law that governs National Agriculture Marketing Council, I don't have it here with me. And also, let me say, I'm not going to pretend as if I've gotten through the details of it. Just the one interest for me and for us, I would imagine. What is the role of Parliament in the appointment of such a council or a board? And how long is this board going to go for?
Thank you, sir. I'm not sure what the role of Parliament is, but the minister appoints council members, and there's a definite term for council members. It's between 2 and 4 years, right? And right now, most of our council members, actually, well, maybe half, the minister appoints council members
I think there's an advertisement in the paper and people are proposed, I'm not sure. But I think that's what happened. And then council members have a definite term, a defined term of service. And I think the maximum is 4 years, as far as I know. And about half of the names you see here are waiting, have expired, and the minister is considering to appoint new members. I think on the list here, the people whose terms have not expired is the chairperson, it's myself, it's Mamolo, it's Manya, it's Gil. What about Derek? Yeah, all the reps have expired. So, but the minister is applying her mind to that.
Can I just add to that? If the Marketing of a Culture Board Product Act, which is an act that governs the NMC, says that when a term of office of a council member has come to an end, that council member will serve until such time that the minister appoints a replacement. So that's why you still have the 10 council members, even though some of them term of office has expired, but they will continue to serve until such time that the minister appoints a replacement.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think it's quite a subject that we have to take notice of. And I think you know that the same situation happens with the land bank, and there is a private motion before the House where the process of appointing members to any board that is actually responsible to report to the Parliament must go through a specific process. And I think we must really make sure that in the situation of the National Agricultural Marketing Council, all the nominations also come before this portfolio committee for us to put forward a shortlist to the minister. I think that is the normal procedure. Then at least we've also got a say, not a final say, but at least an advisory capacity say, in which members we feel is suitable for the specific vacancies that exist. And then obviously the minister can have a final say, but if that does not happen, we sit with a situation that people are appointed, we do not have responsibility or did not have responsibility to help in the appointment process, but in the end we've got to have oversight on the work of those people. So I would like to propose, Chair, that you or the management of the PC make sure that in the National Agricultural Marketing Council situation, the same process is followed.
Thank you. Mama?
Chairperson, if I'm not mistaken, the chairperson here indicated that the term of the council is between 2 and 4 years. And the present council was appointed on the 1st of July 2007, which means it's still in existence if it's between 2 and 4, if they were appointed on the 1st of July 2007. That's my understanding, or I don't know.
Yeah, maybe if you could just quickly, without really, the matter I'm raising, likewise with all these other boards, whether you're talking about PPECB and you name them. As we speak now, in fact, the only one, there's a bit of an anomaly in some of these boards. Agricultural Research Council, sorry, by the way, we have a role as Parliament that we need to play. In fact, as we speak now, the DG is meant to, I'm just smuggling an issue now, members, if you will just listen attentively to this one. The department is meant to give a notice to the Speaker and the NCOP Chair for us as members of Parliament to
to play our role in the nomination processes of the ARC board. They need to give us certain deadlines. They have done all the work on their part. But for us, we have a... You have such situations where other boards, we have a role. In other situations, we don't have a role. So we certainly have a responsibility of having to review all of these councils and boards as to our role as parliament in the appointment or nomination processes. So in a nutshell, that's the context in which I was raising the issue. Thanks.
Can I just answer the question that was raised? The 2 to 4 years, it's not all members of council that were appointed on the 1st of July. In fact, the latest people who were appointed who've only had one term of office are the ones who's, that have said are still on council. And I think their terms are expiring next year. I think for, handover, the minister would mix, would renew others so that they can, the other people can learn from them. And then those terms will expire before the other one, unless something happens and someone has to be terminated or has to resign. But so that's what I mean. There are people on our council who've been there for many terms being renewed, and then there are those who have whose terms have expired. But as the CEO said, those, you know, the act allows for that until we get new names.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I will try to be very quick. Then I will skip the council committee members and the council committees. You have that. And come to slide number 9. And I was saying that we are of the opinion that if you are to settle black farmers, you need to be able to settle them and provide them with all the necessary support that is required in order for them to succeed. And we have started the process 3 years ago of developing what we call marketing development schemes. And we chose the word scheme because it has a history that is associated with. That might not necessarily be good, but we chose that. So we started a process a couple of years ago of designing various development schemes, and I'll give examples of some of those schemes that are currently in operation. And let me start by saying that in doing so, what we then did was to say, how do we engage partners and the department in making sure that this is not something that the NNC does on its own, but it's something that is done by partners who provide the thinking and the design. So for example, in the Northern Cape, you have a scheme that has been running for a while in terms of cycling farmers producing grapes for wine, juice, and those are black. And the challenge there is that it's 50 hectares, you have excess capacity in terms of wine cellars, we need to increase that. We have designed a scheme to increase that to 500 hectares in partnership with the cooperatives that are in existence in that area. And in doing that, we are able to ensure that there is planting material, there are people who prepare the land, and the financing that is required in order for farmers to produce on time and service the market that is available in that area. And I'm happy to say companies like Distel and others are quite involved in making sure that a scheme like this actually works. An example of a scheme that we did and that is currently working and we're very proud of it's what we call the Eastern Cape Red Meat Scheme, where the view was that there are a lot of farmers in the Eastern Cape who have cattle, and the only way they sell their cattle is taking the cattle from the fells and taking it to an auction and don't necessarily fetch a good price. What we have done with partners is to set up three custom feeding facilities. One of them is in Fort Cox, where farmers take in their winners, they are fattened, and those winners are then sold to various abattoirs, and therefore allows farmers to sell a much better product and earn a much better income over a short period of time. Some of those things farmers can't do on their own because they don't necessarily have the feeding facilities or don't necessarily have the land in the area to do that. But if they bring in their winners in a specific area, they're able to do it cheaper. They don't necessarily need to own a feedlot, but they can run a custom feeding facility. And we have given examples of the number of animals that have gone through that custom feeding facility, and we would like to increase that and make it much bigger and have a lot more throughout the country, because we believe that this is one of the ways where you can be in a position to commercialize the livestock that a lot of black farmers have that currently it's not being properly used. And for, but it's the scheme won the Mail and Guardian South African Trust Drivers for Change Award for last year on the business category. It's an award. They look at various business initiatives that are aimed to empower poor rural communities, and that scheme won that award last year. As I had indicated, in collaboration with the department, we are working to looking at possibilities of raising additional funding that will help in making sure that the scheme is replicated in other provinces as well, because like provinces like the Northwest can do the same initiatives as well. We all know of the problems we have in the Lucerne industry. The seed component of the Lucerne industry is doing very well. However, the hay component of the industry is it's in deep trouble. However, we see opportunities to empower black farmers, more especially in the various irrigation schemes that are there in South Africa, in the Northern Cape, and in the Northwest as well. And more especially taking into account that a lot of provinces buy lucerne on an annual basis to feed animals when there is drought. We see an opportunity to design and implement a scheme in the lucerne industry will be able to empower black farmers who will take advantage of the market that we have as government. I have already spoken about the vineyard development scheme. The other scheme that is currently in operation, it's the first one that we did, which is the grain crop development scheme. That we designed, the first year was being funded by the maize trust money, the second year was being funded by the maize trust money, and this year we're putting additional funding into the grain crop development scheme to make it much bigger. And what the scheme does is, once all the components in terms of support have been provided, the missing link in most cases is input cost assurance. And what the scheme does, it helps black farmers buy input cost assurance, and those farmers who don't necessarily have assets are then able to access the required production input that would make their business succeed. And we come in and provide that support, obviously with an understanding that cooperatives will provide extension support. We provide mechanization support. In some cases, like in the Northwest, where a new farmer is participating, the government will provide what you call a lining support for some of those farmers. And we found that the scheme has worked very well. If you have been following Farmers Weekly and other newspapers, you'll have seen some of the farmers who benefited from the scheme and the level, the amount of crop that they've harvested, both maize, sunflower, and wheat. We are also cognizant of the fact that the farmers we support, either in schemes or other programs we have at the NMC, require capacity. Because if they are capacitated and they have a much broader understanding of agriculture, they will grow their business and create jobs. So we run a training program that is very much focused part of it is academic and the other part is very practical. We have three of those. One is focused on women. One is focused on those farmers we help in on the export promotion program, and the other one is focused on agribusinesses all over Africa. We run this with Stellenbosch University, with Cornell University, as well as the Perishable Products Export Control Board. And we have a target there in terms of number of farmers we run through the program on an annual basis. Chair, quickly, we also have an export promotion program that we have been trying to get going for a while, and has been a problem. One component of it is sending farmers overseas to interact with buyers. But the reality in South Africa is that there are very few black farmers who have produce that can be exported. So sending farmers overseas doesn't necessarily make sure that they will be able to negotiate contracts and sell. So we have then been forced to come back and say, how do you take a smaller group of farmers, make sure that they're accredited, and by ensuring that they're accredited, there are certain things you need to do in order to improve their production practices so that they can be accredited and be able to export. Then it forces you to interact back in terms of looking at their production practices. So we have clusters, we have two clusters we have identified, and there are a number of farmers in each and every cluster that we're working with, and saying that over a three-year period, how do we help them get to a point where I can represent to show you that farmer started 3 years ago and can show you a contract that they've negotiated that they're servicing. So we have a program that does that, and the targets that have been set up are meant to do that. Chef, we are also cognizant of the fact that the NAMC has a budget of 32 million, 34 million. Has access to trust money and levy money, but still it's still very small. So there is at this stage, looking at the size of the NAMC, there is absolutely no way that we'll be able to help each and every farmer in the country. It requires collaboration with industry partners and specifically with both provincial and national government. So what we do is we research what we do and provide case studies that provide lessons as to how you do things. And those lessons are aimed to communicate some of the findings to yourself, but also help other people who want to do work in terms of other methods that they could apply in linking farmers to markets. Chair, I will then move quickly in terms of saying that one of the big component divisions within the NAMC is the statutory measures division, where we investigate the five statutory measures in the Marketing Act, being statutory levies, records and returns, registration, control of exports, as well as conducting of pools. I will talk specifically to the statutory measure on levies, and this year we will investigate 30 statutory measures, and we hope to get the minister to approve at least 20 of those. And the statutory measures, I used to do certain things. One, if you look at last year, we spent 22% of the money raised on research, 23% of the money raised on schemes and other transformation-related projects, 17% of the money raised on information, and 12% of the money raised on export promotion. And this is money that industry raises and spend on those things. To give you an example, if we look at research, out of the 70 million rands that was spent researching how you can grow the sector, 26 million rands of that was spent at the ARC. Just on statutory measures alone. On information, most of the information that we use at the country, either comes from the Crop Estimate Committee or from industry. And somebody has to fund for this information that industry generates in order for all of us to decide as to how the sector is moving. So 70% of the money, which is 36%, 36 million, is spent on information. And you on a regular basis get information from SAGIS on wheat and sorghum. You get information from the South African Wine Industry Council, Wine Industry Information Services, as well as South African red meat industry. And so the statutory levies are meant to ensure that this organization functions and are in a position to provide the information you require. I will move quickly. We spent some money on export promotion last year, it was 25 million. We think that will increase that by 10% this year to fund certain things like WOSA and exporting wine exports in South Africa, also to fund local promotion as well. Chair, one of the responsibilities we have under the Making It Act is to provide a crop estimate liaison committee that advises the department on how the process of crop collection of crop estimate information is collected and disseminated. We have those three sessions on an annual basis, and we'll continue to do that this year. Let me then move quickly to one of the issues we discussed today, which is about agricultural trust. When we came last year, what we indicated was that we have set up a desk that will help in terms of improving communication between the minister and ministerial trustees, improve issues in terms of appointment of ministerial trustees, and in our opinion, those things have improved. There are reports that have been written going to the minister. There are engagement in terms of meetings between the minister and ministerial trustees. And the process of appointing ministerial trustees and getting the minister's input into that has improved. However, the main challenge still remains in terms of saying that as long as the Act is not rewritten and we have incorporated trust into the Act, what you want to achieve might not necessarily happen as easily as you expected to happen. And the other issue we spoke about today was the whole issue in terms of market information, specifically food price information. We will continue to do that work, but as we have discussed, until such time that we finalize the process of rewriting the Marketing Act and incorporate some of those things, we will continue to have those challenges that you want addressed. Okay, if you don't mind, I have skipped a number of slides that are very important, but the view was that they probably don't necessarily talk to issues you raised today, but issues relating to research that we do that you could read. So I've skipped some of those slides, but I'll be happy to answer questions if they come from those specific slides. Quickly, Chair. We have also submitted a human resource plan that details the number of positions we have and that we will fill, how we plan to find the right people, how the skill sets we want, as well as how we plan to keep the talents that we have within the NANC. The human resource plan also gives you a detail as to the number of women versus men and the various, basically the geographic of the country. We have provided that, and I'm not going to go through that. I'll be able to answer questions if they come. In terms of the budget, Chair, what we have as a parliamentary grant this year is 32 million, and that will grow up to 39, just under 40 million in year 2022, year 2012. We're, however, confident that if you look at the Marketing Act and rewrite it, you will be in a position to say what is it that agricultural marketing in South Africa deserves and how it should be funded. Because I still think that it's a crime that is a country that is as big as South Africa and have a strong agricultural sector spends 32 million on magazine. Thank you, Chair.
The chair. In that order, Mr. Brown, Mr. Stala, and Mr. Chitra.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank the presenters. I want to place on the record once again that we only received these presentations and documents this morning. And we've got a standard arrangement with all entities reporting to us that we should get it at least a week beforehand. So with that disadvantaged background, I want to continue asking my questions. Chairperson, we've heard here that there would be a presentation that would be made, I think, by the Department of Agriculture with regard to pricing issues. I don't know, and changes to existing legislation. We would like to know when that is anticipated to take place. Secondly, when you talk of giving food support to newly settled farmers, the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform, I congratulate him for not being a denialist, accepting reality that 90% of the 6 million hectares of land that has been restituted and reformed is not being utilized. This is a major challenge for the country, because what has happened is that 6 million hectares of land has been withdrawn from production in whatever form. What sort of role can NAMC play in assisting with advice, with your studies that you conduct, and with your limited budget, to help make that land productive so that food security can be guaranteed and so that people can be empowered? I may just add that at a conference on Friday, I suggested to the sponsors of the conference that this is one issue that we should not allow to pass by, and that organization should also engage the minister and see in what way this can be done. So in short, I'm asking you, what do you perceive to be your contribution towards it? Regarding the cotton industry, what I've learned is that at its height in this country, it was spread over a number of provinces. Today it is located in certain provinces only and in very minimal quantities. At its height, there were 90,000 hectares that were planted to cotton. Today I understand it has reduced to 10% of that figure. We are currently living, most of us are wearing Chinese imported clothing. We need to resuscitate. Where are those cotton shirts that we used to wear, made in South Africa, Monetic and those people? We need to resuscitate it. What role can NAMC play towards promoting the use of cotton? It's an agricultural product which can also generate employment in our country in other sectors, in the value chain. It will have an on-farm advantage of more employment if it is done on a larger scale, and it will have an off-farm benefit of perhaps going along the value chain of not just exporting the cotton, but to resuscitate local industry. What can you do there? And I want to ask you the same thing. 43% of the total GDP of agriculture is generated by your livestock industry, unless you dispute that. And if you can, perhaps it's a percent or two either way. But this is what I'm told by the fundis. Now, that being the case, the bulk of that livestock, of course, is slaughtered here, it finds its way to the homes of people and also for limited export. But we do not have in our country a tannery of note. There are small tanneries, but there's no tannery of note. Yet we have in our country your Mercedes-Benz factory, BMW and others who utilize leather. And of course, what can we do to create an industry based on leather where there can, along the value chain, again be activity and employment opportunities and a lot of things that can happen to change the unemployment situation in our country? Final one, Chair. I believe that NAMC's function, shall I call you, I don't like the word dog, but shall I call you that you are supposed to be the watchdogs also. Whilst you are helping to create opportunities for upcoming farmers to market their produce and what have you, that you also look at other shortcomings, that you don't just focus on your core business, but that your ancillary business should also be to come forward and say that we see a possibility here, that we see some shortcomings there, and unless government makes this or that intervention, the net result hereof will be that in 5 years down the line, we will sit without, for argument's sake, an ostrich industry if we don't look after it now. Not that the ostrich industry is in danger. I'm just giving a hypothetical example. So, Chairperson, I expect that. In short, Chair, what you said here at the opening, we need a proactive approach from all entities so that we can take this country forward and answer those priorities that government has set for the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. My question is around the cooperatives. If the Marketing Council has been engaged with the co-ops, especially in the rural areas, in addressing the skills scarcity, if yes, what are the outcomes? I'm asking this Chairperson because as we were doing the oversight visits in KZN, many co-ops there have collapsed due to lack of skills. Then I would like to know if you are engaged with the co-ops, especially in rural areas, to empower them. Regarding the upcoming farmers, the small-scale upcoming farmers, if you can tell us of any successes in value addition to the production, and if the council has had a role in getting the market for the produce. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I agree. We were at a bit of a disadvantage getting it so late, so to speak, from your back. But I want to address something where I may have a bit of an advantage on you. I want you to turn to page 14, the Vineyard Development Scheme. Now, I must point out to you that I've got about 40 years' experience in this field. And I've been an assistant winemaker and I've managed wine cellars.
Did you say 40 years?
Yes.
40?
Yes. I started very young.
Oh. I thought you were 40 years.
Yes. 40 years experience. I'm not that young. Now, I just want to point out a couple of things. I suppose that this figure that you've written here, 27, and then 3 and then 4 zeros is actually 27,300 tons, is it correct? Not, because you left a space there for a comma. Because I tell you, if you've got 273,000 tons of grapes, you are talking about more than those sellers can produce up there. The biggest seller in South Africa produces about 50,000 tons, and that is at the Olifantsrivier area. That's one seller. So I think you have 27,300 tons, is that correct? Or is it 2,730? Are you with me on that one? Let's talk about 27,000 tons. Okay. It's risky to do more than 20 tons per hectare. You're talking then about 1,300 hectares. talking about 200 full-time jobs, which is about 6 per hectare, which I think is stretching a bit. You would rather work on 2 per hectare or 3 maximum. The other thing that bothers me is the juice market. Now, for the sellers that I was involved with, not all sellers can make juice. It's actually more difficult to preserve that product in a saleable manner than wine. It's easier and cheaper to make wine than juice. So I would not think of that is something that you should endeavor in. That's a bit of, you can waste a lot of money there. Distilling wine, the prices now for wine is very bad. The thing with distilling wine is that they in fact buy not the B grade juice, but they take the cream of the crop, the A juice. They take a lot of the juice from the best wines and use that for distilling brandy. But we are having a glut of it at the moment. So introducing more into that, I don't think in the long run, it would be wonderful if we can do it and get people to drink brandy and export it. But in the same manner, the Minister of Finance is taxing this industry to say that we must drink less. So I really think that we must consider this one as very risky. For instance, if you take this 1,300 hectares that you to get the tonnage for these sellers and to make it viable, if you take these 1,300 hectares and you transform that into money, it is 100,000 rand per hectare now to establish vineyards. Am I correct? More or less. It was 80, I think it's 100 the last couple of years. More or less. Depends on. Now, years ago, I did a cash flow thing, and the break-even was 7 years. Then you only start making break-even on it. And then it was certain price levels, which is not the case now. We know that vineyards could last 20 to 30 years, but if you are now getting a break-even point of 10 years, you can imagine the capital, direct capital that's employed here, as well as the working capital. So if you really want to give somebody a shove from the frying pan into the fire, put him on a wine farm. I think we would rather, if you're looking at creating 200 permanent jobs and getting people a good income, rather go the cattle way, patlangs as we used to say. Don't endeavor into this type of industry. There's a glut on the market. I do not think that the arithmetic can work out profitably. People are selling farms that are very productive. We're talking about farms where farmers are harvesting 600 tons on 20 hectares. Now that's good. That's good. Those are good farmers. That's good. But they're selling the farms because the farm pays for itself and it pays for the workers and it pays for the interest. But it doesn't pay the farmer's salary, and it doesn't pay the kids' university fees. So these people are selling their farms, and they're very successful. We must be very careful here that we are not going to destroy people's hopes and lives on this one. I think I've said enough on this one, but you have to think about the break-even year. You have to think about the years it will take to pay back all the capital tied up, the risks. You're putting your money in now, but you're spreading your risk of international markets and marketing and all that. You're spreading it over 20, 30 years, which is very, very, very chancy. You have to look at the size of the farm. I can tell you now that the people are selling farms in the Western Cape under 20 hectares, they're selling it, because you need 60 hectares in the Western Cape to make a living for you and 10 workers on that farm. Not 20 anymore, or 30 that it used to be. It's 60 now. And then there's a rand per ton guarantee that you have to have over the next 30 years. So, to this committee and to you guys, I see you know a lot of your work. I would rather say give this one a miss, because if you give me a wine farm now, I'd say no thank you.
Mr. Dutoy here, I guess, is indirectly applying to be a consultant. He is quite knowledgeable about the issues to a point of detail. I'm sure you are free to consult him on some of these pertinent issues. Well, he's a public representative, so that will be part of his national service on a continuous basis from days back. Mrs. Mabuza?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, at the Agri-South Africa Conference in Somerset last week, it was said that the amount of wheat produced in South Africa has been declining, and various reasons were cited as high input costs, cheap and cheap imports. Has the NAMC considered the negative impact on food security if this trend continues, and how to overcome it? My second question is, in the South Africa Yearbook of 2008-2009, there's a statement that says, working with the Maize Trust and Oilseed Trust and the Winter Cereal Trust, the NAMC is to have been part of developing a summer grains marketing scheme supporting 5,000 previously disadvantaged growers over 5 years. Can you inform us what the outcomes are and whether you plan to increase the number? And the last one, did the NAMC, in the light of rising agriculture input costs and more specially the anticipated effect of the almost 100% increase in electricity charges over the next 3 years, done any studies and projections on the negative effect on food production in the future sustainability of agriculture, and especially the small-scale upcoming farmers? Thank you.
The questions raised by Mrs. Mabuza and Mr. Abraham, they border very much on a bigger discussion that we still need to take on import tariffs, as they affect various commodities. Maybe that's one other area that we seriously need to engage in, whether you talk about grain, dairy, you know, cotton, and so on and so forth. I mean, the Chinese, simple example, that has to do with the very, very basics in economics. We import finished product at a very nominal price that must compete with our local produce and industry. It needs price way above that we import. Now, those input costs, whether it is labor and other related administrative prices and so on and so forth, they obviously are going to come up. Now, that necessarily therefore kills the local product, kills the local industry, and jobs and income and whatnot and whatnot is killed. Hence, such growing deficits, you know, in our trade balance equation.
That's something as a thought, you know, to just throw for us to, you know, think about whatever in future. Mama Palisa?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for presentation. Mine is, can we also be informed at page 28 of the challenges amongst the trust, if there is any in existence currently? What I want to know also is that whether there is a platform for emerging farmers, a way of communicating to them about how to, I want to add to what Uma Mutwala has said, how to access these markets, because I know of rural areas in Northern Cape and Free State, Effiestrif, Onsipkans, Amatakopstal, that emerging farmers are sitting with very good export production, but they don't know the how part. And if those people who are making a living just out of production abanayo, what I'm actually saying is that according to the State of the Nation address, the President alerted us that we have to make things different. We must change if the current process of measurement is scenario, it is not working for the emerging people on rural areas. We must change. We must find a way to change the situation to make things happen for the emerging farmers. I just want to know whether there is, I don't know whether these agri conferences, whether the emerging farmers are accommodated. And are they well informed on how to access the market for them? How do you communicate to them? What is the way of communication to them? How do you inform them? Thank you.
It was meant for you, Mama Philippine. It's meant for you now.
Me? Alright, thank you, Professor. I want to start on page 34, a human resource plan introduction. And the 4 points you are saying, it has the right people in place, it has the right mix of skills. But you don't have a time frame. When will these things happen? Because if you leave it like this, even next year, it will be like this. I think you need to put maybe time frame, maybe like saying at the end of financial year, because I think this is a 3-year plan. A strategic plan paper, but it must have a time frame. And again, I'll come back again on research. We attended the Agri South Africa conference last week, and they talked about the drop of quota. And how do you see it? Because their statistics were showing that in the last year, South Africa contributed so much on cotton, but as we are speaking now, the cotton is very low. And again, I want to go to page 15. Where you are talking about to increase black farmers' access to maize and oilseed and blah, 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 blah. I want to know the target. The target is black farmers, but how many are you targeting? And when do you think that can happen? To me, it's very important. And again,
help existing black emerging maize and oilseed, blah, 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 blah. Still I'm saying target is emerging farmers, but how many are you targeting? And when will you think these things will be happening? And again, on page 19, okay, you plan to, on page 19, you plan to raise 256 million. By when? Financial year or within this 3? By when? And still I have page 4 and 9 and 2, but I'll come back later. Thank you, Jefferson.
The one challenge that we have, members, is that we are certainly going to go through this whole exercise without having not one touching on the budget. You must also remember that we have a responsibility also of doing or undoing the budget. It lies here among ourselves. If we are not satisfied with the budget, we need to engage with the budget to a point of even changing the budget. We have that responsibility. Listening to Dr. Phillips in the morning on the SABC channel, TV channel, I mean the Parliament channel, he does appreciate this fact, Baba Tabuku, of a need for Parliament to review a budget of a department or an agency of a department. So that's my worry, to a point where I'm saying to myself, when we are going to do a report before the budget vote of the 13th of April, we also need to take on board all these reports in beginning to say, because if we don't engage, if we don't do much on some of these reports, it's tantamount to having agreed with whatever is proposed here. It's not cut in stone. We equally have a responsibility. Unfortunately, I'm aware that we are not going to have enough time, but that's something we might wish to look into emerging out of this session. Mrs. Carter, followed by, I saw your hand up, Mr. Tewekulu. No, it was Mr. Gela. I saw your hand up. Am I right? Mr. Tewekulu, sorry, it was you. Okay. Mrs. Carter.
Thank you, Chief. Okay, I know the NAMC is the Agricultural Marketing Council, but the fishery is now being incorporated into agriculture. Is it also going to fall under the Marketing Council? You know, and if, you know, not possibly it would be, so let's get an answer on that.
Quick answer.
Tomorrow.
Is there to be incorporated?
No, I'm saying maybe we'll know tomorrow. We haven't been advised. Because the S, as it stands.
Expect the mic, if you don't
mind. The S, as it stands, it's agricultural food. And fish. So maybe tomorrow the meeting with the minister, with the department will enlighten us on that.
Okay, well then possibly if I can just take it a bit further. I mean then the first question is going to be, I don't want to really play around on the budget issues, but I do believe that it is important to see, you know, if fisheries come in, how quickly will we be able to get a strategic plan of how to incorporate fisheries first of all, and then also to adjust the budget if there's going to be a need for the budget to be adjusted. If I can just give you a couple of examples. I mean, we went to oversight visit to Hamburg, And we found that there was a problem where your local community, they are going, the fishermen. And you then sit with a situation where you've got a middleman purchasing and they are not getting the prices that they should be getting, right? And then selling it to the end result. So what we need to look at, can we then go and say, establish a co-op that would buy directly to cut out firstly the middleman. And then also, if I look at some of the projects like in the Northern Cape and in the Eastern Cape, like the projects you've got, if we can look at also resuscitating projects, I mean, there's, for example, privately owned oyster farms in the Hamburg area that totally collapsed. All the infrastructure is there. And if we do take fisheries on board, can't we also look at some of those projects to get the communities involved and to resuscitate those projects?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine will be a concern that with regards to the upliftment of this emerging farmers in the sugarcane industry. Not sure whether the AMC has ever maybe focused or ever given attention on how these emerging farmers are being treated when it comes to delivering their harvest to the mills. You know, there is a bad tendency that is going on in the transport industry, where farmers are allocated quotas for transporting cutting and sort of delivering their harvest to the mills, where you would find that the big transport owners take time to transport the sugarcane from the emerging farmers or the black farmers in rural areas where we come from, such that the product goes to the mill with very little or no sort of required succulents to come up or to the mill. And as a result, you find that people out there end up getting peanuts or even nothing at the end of the day. And over and above that, you could find that at times their allocation or their tickets for allocation are said to have gone missing. As a result, they don't even earn a cent when they have worked for the product that they have taken to the mill. And I wonder that if the NAMC has ever focused on it, because I think that's one of the industries where our black and emerging farmers are exploited by the mill owners and the transport companies. Thank you.
Okay, I take it we're going to respond to all of those. Maybe just a quick one, Mrs. Carter, if you are going to be covering Mrs. Ma. The adjustments typically, you know, are expected in October annually, wherein, you know, departments look at spend and project future, you know, for following year. But those are issues that we also need to look into during that time, September, October, about whole incorporation of, you know, fully the fisheries into the committee's agenda. The floor is yours, Ms. Simpson.
I am hoping that the department will not give us the job of the fisheries. I am not sure that we can deal with it. I think the specifics of the question the CEO will deal with, but I just thought I should maybe highlight some of the questions where I can give a global view.
the NAMC Council has a lot of, in fact, were quite a few women on the council since the 2007 one, and all of us are farmers, which has been a very challenging time for me as chair, but also for the other small scale farmers who are council members of the NAMC. The other gentlemen too have a wealth of experience in farming. So it is a council that has practical knowledge of farming in different sectors. But I just as an overview, I'm saying it's been a very worthwhile exercise, but also very frustrating because of the lack of integration in agriculture in our country. You see a problem, you wish you could address it because it even affects your own life, but you can't address it within the parameters in which you sit. I'm talking here about the cooperatives. The cooperatives in our country, unfortunately, we are not like even the Swedens and the Kenyans, and our cooperative movement is very young, and it is linked to the way capital is dispersed rather than the cooperation and the cohesion of what a cooperative is. So even the people who are supposed to skill the cooperative themselves don't understand the cooperative. So I just felt I must mention this because we are in this house where we are with the lawmakers, and this portfolio committee is really everywhere the government is talking cooperatives, but it's very difficult. When Honorable Fodekulu talks about the sugar industry, because of where we sit as some of the members of council, we know exactly what he's talking about. But there is nothing you can do about that problem, except we know that it exists. We try in our corners to address it. But within the main framework of the government, you will have to go to DTI, and DTI will tell you that to help form those farmers into a co-op, they need to be given 300,000 or 400,000 themselves. They don't have the skills to look after the funds that they are given. So you need a person who can come and teach them that. There is no entity that can actually do that. I don't know whether you get my point. So agriculture is fraught with very, very many things. But as for NAMC, I really can say it is a live organization. Through the schemes that we are involved in the past 3 years, we opened a unit that just deals with small-scale farmers, as the CEO was saying. And through that, the NAMC is very, very focused on the challenges that are facing small-scale farmers. So as the NAMC, through the members, we really know the challenges that are frustrating as a portfolio committee member. Fortunately, the department also becomes our sounding board. There are instances when we'll tell them, you know what, this really has to be done somehow. And they will look in their departmental budget and see whether they can give us a little bit of money to address a certain corner of the challenges we're talking about. So we work very closely with the department in there. But the need for integration is huge. Coming back to market, as I said, again about integration, access to markets, we are sitting now as industry in South Africa through the industries that pay these levies. There's a problem around Thailand and the phytosanitary things, Indonesia. There's a challenge around how you resolve disputes within WTO. That is between, it doesn't sit with us as market access people. But when industry has a problem, they come to us. And we have to go to the department, we have to go to DTI, but we have no direct link with this, except that we've created those things. But we're talking very, very serious market access issues. that end up coming to us, but they are not within our sphere. I thought I must just put an overview, but Ubaqulekulu is there. Ubaqulekulu, on another forum, we have been trying to deal with Idanel Mill, Tongat, because of the farmers that are grouped around those mills and having noticed how they are struggling like that. Because if you are going to cut your sugar today and you take it to the mill in 3 days, then you may as well not cut it at all. So we are aware of that. All we can do is to elevate it to maybe the provincial government and hope that someone can help form a transport cooperative. But that's a lot of money. But it's an issue, as I say, because we are in the agricultural sphere, we are aware of. Then the CEO can answer the more direct question.
Thanks, Chair. I'll try to be quick. Mr. Morogolo will answer all questions related to cotton and the leather industry. And then I'll try and answer the rest of the questions. Let me start off by the vine grape scheme. And for a number of reasons, because there are a lot of questions, I'll start with that one, hopefully. By the time I finish answering the questions, you'll have forgotten what I said. That's true. But I certainly don't have 50 years experience in the wine industry, so I wouldn't question what you're saying. However, based on the work that the group is doing, we think that there is sense in what they're doing. We think that companies that are part of the scheme believe that there's value in terms of empowerment, and certainly looking at the juice industry, even though it's quite difficult, we think that there is value there. Perhaps what I could do is, before I stop doing work in the wine grape scheme, is to engage and bring you into the team so that you can tell everybody else how they're going wrong. We have these meetings twice a month, it's once every 2 months, and I will certainly make sure that through the administrators, the honorable member is invited to the team and help the team develop the scheme going forward. Through the chair. Thank you. So we'll do that. But going back to the rest of the document, there was rest of the question. There was a question in terms of the farms that have been either restricted or transferred to land reform that are struggling. What we did as the NMC and other SOEs within the family of agriculture was to agree on how we will target some of the farmers that were funded through the land bank. To say, those farms that were funded through the land bank and that are struggling, let's identify them, let's ask the five SOEs agree that we put our resources in order to make sure that some of those were able to rescue and help grow. So you will find that when we talk about the various schemes that we're designing, you will find that we talk about partnerships with the land bank and others in terms of ensuring that that happens. For example, when you talk about the grain marketing scheme, when you look at a specific area and you find those farms that are struggling, the input cost insurance that we pay for will be insurance that the land bank provides, and we're able to buy that at a discount. And once you do that, it will provide the rest of the support. We believe that there are some of those farmers that are struggling that can be put back into the right track. So we have committed ourselves, as well as the other SOEs, to ensure that some of those farms will help. Obviously, we'll not be in a position to help all of them at once, but we have a system that we believe could work in contributing to addressing the problem that has been identified. There was also an issue in terms of us being white dogs in what is happening in the industry and some of the problems. And perhaps what I could do through the chair is to send you a review that we did late last year on all Section 7 committees that the NNC has ever done, as well as all industry plans that have ever been developed for each and every commodity. On each and every agricultural commodity, because in most cases you run Section 7 committees because there are problems. Industry identifies those problems, and as industry and government, we need to do something to address them. The challenge is, in most cases, nothing gets done. We will be very happy to through the chair, share with you what industry has done in reviewing all of the Section 7 committees, as well as the strategic plans that have been developed, and the status and purpose of each and every one of those. That way you'll be in a position to see if we have been identifying problems and what we have recommended and what has been done. Because most of the problems, like what has happened in the cotton industry, what has happened in the dairy industry, even the lucerne industry, even the ostrich industry, are issues that the industry has identified a couple of years back. It's just that we haven't really, as a country, been proactive in addressing some of those challenges. But we'll be happy to share that with you, and hopefully you'll be able to help us in ensuring that some of those things get done.
Just on that point, CEO, I was just trying to consult with the committee secretariat here. We are obviously not going to conclude on all of these issues today. We have never not once touched on the budget. Now, I was just trying to establish as to how best do you go forward. For all intents and purposes, what we are hearing now, and the pace in which we are moving, and the level at which we are at, it's clearly simply just, National Agriculture Marketing Council did pass through Parliament. And that's what you are going to do, effectively, and say, for all intents and purposes, to the department, no, we've been there. We presented our report, strat plan, HR plan, business plan, and also the budget. And the reality is, we've not had enough time to engage on all of these issues. They're equally very important. I guess that's also what we went through with the Department of Culture, Forest and Fisheries when they presented. And again, it takes us back to a point that says, what is our role here as members of Parliament? We are simply a body that rubber stamps for all intents and purposes. You've been through. That's what you say to yourself. Then you sit it among yourself, department. And knowing full well that we've never engaged on these issues, but you've done your duty in terms of your own regulations. The law says within this period of time you need to have gotten through, and also the law on our part. No, they did come past us as a committee. But as to whether we did engage on these issues, that's a very, very big question mark that I have for myself. I'm short for words for us to say how best to move forward. If we could just 5 minutes of our time, Mama Buza, Mama Kata.
Chairperson, the NAMC budget is 32 million, if I'm not mistaken.
32 and a half, something.
Yes, but around figure is 32 million. And what NAMC does, they get their money from levies. And Chairperson, if you go page through
without getting into the details of the discussion, I just want us to decide as to how best you go forward. Whether are you suggesting that we engage on the issues now, and then we tell ourselves that we're going to be around here for give or take 1.5 hours. That's the kind of advice I'm looking for.
Chairperson, I was trying to say their budget is not a very big budget, and can we allow them to respond to the questions that were raised, because the questions that were raised are part of the program that we started last year to check if they have moved. And also, we can give them 10, 15 minutes to look into the budget and the levies that they have raised themselves as NAMC. What I would really like them to explain to us is the money for the trust of the meetings that they will have with the minister. Because to me, it's a big junk. That's where they need to adapt. But otherwise, Chairperson, it's not a very big budget. We can deal with it. Thank you.
Mama Kata.
Thank you, Chair. And from our side, it's not just on budget issues. I feel very strongly about it, that we've got the departments, we've got the marketing councils coming in, and it's a question of a half an hour, to be able to get through all the problems. We're not going to get through it. They've also got challenges. We are here also to be a support. I think when we get to city sessions or staff sessions or business plans, that we should really try and not start a meeting at 10 o'clock and try and be finished by 12 o'clock, but if we could possibly say, listen, put a whole day aside, so that we can interact and we can make a difference and we can assist. I think also a lot is going to depend on what is happening in your meeting tomorrow, but if it's possible, then we could also reschedule, okay, and have, say, another half a day, or at least full day, that we can interact, where we can really see that we are making a difference.
Dr. Potter?
Chair, I think, let me start in the beginning. First of all, I think if you look at the Marketing Council, they've got specific issues that they have to manage and advise the Minister on. Look at the industry, look at the profitability, and look at the markets and identify those issues that is necessary to run the industry. All the other issues that is around it is actually additional information that we can gather from all over. Specifically, if you look at developmental aspects around the NAMC's role, most of those issues are actually run by other groupings like the trust. And I think I would like also to maybe see, because we never see it, or have a report back from the trust, so that we holistically, the other members also understand what is really done with the money from the trust, so that we understand where the links are between the different sectors within the industry. Then we would have a more holistic view and understand, if we talk of a trust, what is the trust doing to develop people on the ground and so forth. The real issue for us, if we look only at the narrow objectives of the National Agricultural Marketing Council, then we should really only look at those issues and concentrate on that and see if we're satisfied with the issues around that. And that is mostly on the marketing side. Is the Marketing Act efficient enough to open the markets up? Are we globally positioned in a correct situation? And some of the questions that were raised on some of the industries that are failing, it's actually not due to the Marketing Council's interference, but it's due to some other organizations in our management system that is not doing their job. Like, for instance, ITAC. We never get information from ITAC when an application for a tariff is presented to them, so that we also understand and get the information of those issues that runs around it. I'll tell you the the open market or the free market system out there is actually running and dictating most of the issues that we are talking about here this morning. The cotton industry, the wheat industry. I mean, the reality is there. We just got to understand the reality and put forward some solutions to the problems, but we don't get to that bottom of the issues. So what I would like to say is, let us focus on the issues of the Marketing Council. Let us have a look at the budget, because the budget is not big. There are one or two questions that I would like to maybe just have clarity on, but I think it's not a big issue. But we've spent a lot of time today not really looking at the issues that why the Marketing Council is before us.
Okay, I guess so there are two issues there. One is that we are going ahead, and two, whenever we're going to have another session on business plan, budget and so on, we need to start earlier. I think those are the issues that are being raised here. Can you try and summarize, and then we go ahead with other later questions? Thanks.
Chairperson, I had my hand up. I don't know. Chairperson, I want to challenge some of the issues that were raised here.
Why don't we allow them to continue in their response?
No, Chairperson, we are here representing our people, and we need to raise issues of deliverance. And we are here representing ordinary people who will never be in Parliament. And so there's no way, Chairperson, it will look as if we are wasting time here. We are here representing people, and we need to raise issues on behalf of our people. We don't have opportunity of raising those issues.
Mama, I'm not representing anybody here myself. All what I'm saying here is that we allow the panel to respond and conclude on their responses to the questions that we've raised. Then we continue with further questions. That's all what I'm saying here. And I repeat, I am not representing anybody myself as Lulu Johnson. Thank you.
Okay. Can I just maybe add one thing to the list of questions that I had? Can I just say that originally the NNC was scheduled to come in front of the Portfolio Committee that next week on the 9th. We were asked on Monday to come and present today. That's why you didn't get the document 9 days before. Yes. So we had to work so that the documents are ready for you in order for us to come and present. We apologize for the inconvenience, but there was nothing I could do about it. In terms of the rest of the questions, there was a question in terms of the wheat industry. What have we done to address the problems in the wheat industry? And that links to the question in terms of being a watchdog. Again, 3 years ago, when the price of bread was very high, the industry set up a Section 7 committee to look at the wheat industry and what is it that we can do. The industry produced a report as to what are some of the things that could be done to address the challenge. And this is the challenge that we'll probably have in 2 years' time when the price of food goes up again. But and I'll again be happy to share with you the recommendations that came out from the industry so that you can help us get them implemented. The challenge we have as the agricultural sector is that a lot of work gets done where industry commits and industry does work, but there are certain things that industry can't do anything about, and we need to collectively figure out how we get some of those things implemented. And that's a challenge we have. And again, through the chairperson, I will send that Section 7 committee report so that you can really look at those recommendations. And then when you have much broader strategy discussions on industries, then maybe you can look at some of those recommendations and see how they get implemented. Again, there was an issue in terms of have we done any work on the negative effect of electricity. If you go back to the the food cost review that you have in front of you, which was 2008, you will find that there is a big section on that document that talks about the impact of electricity, which is both electricity cuts and anticipated increase in the price of electricity. Work has been done in terms of how the impact is on that, and other regulated prices have on food prices. We will release the next quarterly food price trend. We'll have a huge section that talks about electricity and the impact that that has on food prices. So that information is there. It's been released, and we'll welcome your intervention in getting some of those challenges addressed. Because we
and
know
when
what
is that expected?
The next quarterly food price trend, believe correct me if I'm wrong, should come by the end of May. And we will send that through as well. There was an issue in terms of trust. Some of the challenges that we experience in trust, I have highlighted some of them when I came to address you the last time. I've also highlighted what we have done, but the reality is that trusts are governed by trustees, and you have trustees, and in most of the trusts, you have the minister who has fewer ministerial trustees compared to the rest of the industry. And so the only influence that the minister has on those trusts is through the ministerial trustees that are there. One of the challenges we have had, and that we've tried to correct, is that some of the trustees were not attending meetings. Some of them were attending meetings but not saying anything. And some of them were not engaging with the minister or ourselves in terms of what is it that they should be doing when they go to
court. Just one thing. Are we all done with tea or something? Are they replacing? Oh.
What the minister has done, and she has helped us considerably on this, is to ensure that when we appoint ministerial trustees, we appoint trustees who are competent. And that has made a big difference in terms of the quality of work that they do in trust, and we're starting to see the kind of response we're seeing in some of the trusts, like the Ministry Trust and the other trusts. However, the challenge still remains that I don't think that it's a good situation where the response from trust is very much dependent on trustees. I think some of the trustees were designed a long time ago, and some of them are outdated, and we need to find a way of helping trust and trustees figure out how to amend. And this process in terms of looking at the Magenia Act will help us do that. If I give you an example, in 1996, doing work on transformation, if you do that using trust money, you get taxed. But if you do work on research and information collection and dissemination, you don't get taxed. So then you have a challenge where a trust wants to spend money helping black farmers and it gets taxed for it. I think it's wrong. But the reality is that the reason that has happened is because in 1994, 1993, probably those were not the issues. So the trust has lost pace with what are the realities in terms of what's happening in the country. And we need to help them figure out some of those things and help them sort some of those things out. There was a couple of issues relating to targets as well as due dates on the HR plan. And other documents, and the unfortunate part is that you only got the documents today. But if you go into the FICA document, you find that in each and every one of those there are targets. You find that there are targets in terms of which quarter some of those things will be done. Yes, and I sincerely apologize that you got the documents today, but there was nothing I could do about it. Billy, do you want to talk about the other two?
Thank you. I'll just be very quick. In terms of the question raised around when the presentation can be tabled before the committee, I think as soon as we get an invitation, we'll come and also. We're just waiting to hear whether when can we just, you know, come and make a presentation. And quickly around Koto, last year we had the world converging into Cape Town to discuss you know, all the challenges facing the cotton industry globally. And the key message or the key issue that was raised was mainly around the subsidization of cotton by the key, you know, the key producers, looking at the US and mainly China, which have a strong base on the production of you know, textiles. And I think this issue is one of the test cases at the WTO, where the developing countries, the major cotton producers that they call the C4, Burkina Faso, Mali, Cameroon, and the other countries that I forgot, was actually pressing the US to say drop the subsidies on cotton, because cotton is looked at as a developmental crop, you know, in the developing countries, similarly to South Africa. But it's still one of those sticking issues. There's no movement. And in that context, you know, cotton being a globally traded commodity, the price that we get in South Africa is dictated somewhere else. And, you know, the report that I've just read, I think about 2 days ago, the price of cotton seems to be increasing. And I think that becomes a signal for the cotton producers then to start investing in the production of cotton, because even last year, we had the smallest crop, I think, in more than 10 years in South Africa. And that problem was not only felt here, but it was also felt across the globe. Further fueled by the textile production you know, system in China, which is heavily subsidized, and you know, those kind of merchandise are fighting their way into our economy and competing and failing with what we produce here. But I think the DTI has also been proactive in terms of kind of, you know, putting into place some kind of an arrangement to limit the quantity of textile coming from China into our economy. So that system, I think, somehow managed to reduce the influx of the cotton-based, you know, materials that came into our economy. And also the through chairperson, the strategy that the department has with the cotton industry is still in place, but I think on the basis of these international challenges, it really could not find a lot of momentum, because price is a major determinant in terms of people putting you know, money for seed into the soil to produce cotton. But we're hoping that the international space will actually clear up, and then these C4 countries that I've just mentioned as the spokespersons for the cotton industry, you know, for the developing countries, will actually make some headway in terms of coming up with long-lasting solutions. South Africa was the host of that conference last year, and I think some strong recommendations were actually proposed at that level. But primarily, the WTO must be decisive and move into this kind of issue, because until such time that they take a decision in terms of, you know, subsidization, I don't think we're likely to see any positive outcomes coming out of the cotton industry in the developing economies. The leather and the textile industry, I gave you some challenges, I think, related to the pricing of your skins. I'm looking at the biggest abattoir in the Southern Hemisphere. That plot has about 1,500 animals per day. And all the skins and hides get shipped to Italy. Because the price that is offered in our local economy here is not that attractive to compete with the you know, the offshore, you know, buyers. And again, we have a challenge with one of our subgroups, the customs union members, who have placed a ban on the export of skins and hides into South Africa. And therefore, that's why we are now sitting on excess capacity on our leather tanning industry. And the further challenge that maybe we will have to look at is the quality of the skins and hides that are derived from the livestock that we have in the, you know, from the communal areas. Because the quality, in terms of the branding that we have, you know, they brand the animal at the prime spot. And once you brand the animal at that prime spot, I mean, the leather is useless. You can't use it for anything. The tick bites also, I think, contribute to the problem. The fences, you know, the kind of trees, what you call it, the acacia trees. The environment within which this leather is produced in South Africa, I think, really is a bit of a challenge. And I think this matter has escalated with the you know, SAMIC and the NERPO and you know, the livestock industry in general. So say, you know, these are the challenges. We are sitting on excess capacity in terms of the leather tanning industry, which fits into the your furniture upholstery, the automotive industry, like the chairperson indicated, the footwear, the you know, quite a big industry. But because of these basic challenges that we're facing, I think we are likely not to make headway into it. But the other issue is, I think, the pricing. Somebody said it's like a mafia business in terms of allocating who buys what leather from who buys you know, for how much. So those are the kind of you know, salient features that characterize the industry. But I think over a period of time, because now we understand the nature of the problem, we should be able to get to the bottom of it. The issue around the wheat, safe to say that we have noted as a department that the local prices, the global prices of wheat are depressed by about 10% on average. And now, through our interaction with the International Trading Administration Commission, we have formulated a position to say, as and when we develop the tariffs, you know, a position for agricultural commodities, let's take that into consideration, the extent of subsidization of some of these commodities. And I think we are slowly getting to a common position now with the ITEC. And fortunately, I'm one of the part-time commissioners sitting on ITEC, you know, from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And some of these issues, we are raising them up just to escalate and maybe even raise the importance of the sector in terms of other, you know, characteristics, rural development, food security, all these different dimensions, I think, have been escalated. And I think even the work that is done through the department partnership with the Winter Cereal Trust also, we're seeing quite a number of you know, black farmers you know, getting elevated in terms of wheat production. And we're hoping that once the tariff system is at a level that encourages domestic production, we might be able to see you know, increasing quantities of wheat being produced in the economy, and maybe begin to balance the net import position that we find ourselves in. So, Chair, I think on those you know two issues, I thought maybe I should just name it a bit of information around cotton and wheat, and the sugar industry. I think the chairperson you know, gave a lot of information around what is actually happening, and maybe also looking at the development of the Ingezo, I think that company, which is actually established to articulate the interests of the black players within the sugar industry. It has been institutionalized, and I think we can actually pick up from the experiences and begin to package solutions to, you know, to address the kind of issues that you're talking about, the development of a transport cooperative. I think there's quite a number of options that could be explored. Without giving too much details, Chair, I don't know whether I've done just to the questions that I have decided to take up. Let me just quickly check if there is anything that is missing. On the fisheries, yes, well, I think we are still, you know, trying to clarify in terms of role clarification, who does what between the department and the MCM. So it's still an issue that has not yet settled yet. I think once we get an idea in terms of role clarification and allocation of role responsibilities, we should be able to say, maybe the marketing council share of the acquired you know, fisheries, and maybe also forests will be X, but for now I don't think we can be able to make that determination. And then I think Chair, that summarizes my response to the questions raised. Thank you.
Thank you. The members specified that all your questions were addressed.
I take note that the CEO spoke with regard to people who have problems with their land bank loans, and that they are trying to assist those people. Well, if you are doing that, I want to thank you for that. They need help. But Chair, what I really was talking about is that in the past, whenever, I don't know if you were at the meeting where Land Affairs was also present in previous years, but the DG of Land Affairs, whenever he was asked what is the status of land reform projects and restitution projects, his response was a standard one. 49% are in trouble, 51% are doing well. What I'm saying today is I congratulate the new Minister of Rural Development for admitting that of the 6 million hectares of land that has been either reformed or restituted or whatever, 90% is non-productive and have failed. Now my question was whether NAMC, who is an important player in accessing markets, in determining which commodities would go well, and of course there are other private sector organizations, commodity organizations. You've got, for example, Agri South Africa. These people have commodity organizations under their wing. What I'm asking is whether you as NAMC have either been approached by that department or by your own department, agriculture, or by any other entity, or out of your own volition, decided that, look, here is a national crisis. I want to emphasize here the fact that 90% of all our projects have failed, have not only cost the country in monetary terms billions of rand, it is also costing our country heartaches. Because those people that were put on that land, many were set up for failure from the beginning. And Chairperson, when we used to warn the department, we were told it's nonsense, they are working well. We were told that we are being negative. When the former Minister of Agriculture and Land Affairs came to the Portfolio Committee and said, I think in 2007, that within 2 years, they were going to purchase 5 million hectares of land and put 10,000 farmers on it. I don't know if Mr. Ramabulana remembers that. I had the guts to say that, Madam Minister, that cannot happen, because if you want to do it in 2 years, you will require to place, including on holidays, 13.6 farmers per day to achieve that target. Pooh, it never happened. All I'm asking is, I'm a straightforward guy. I'm not ashamed to say that something is not going to work, as my sixth sense tells me that. I want to know whether your department has anything in place, any plan in place, to see that we get that land productive again, by whatever means. That land must work. The people involved there must work and benefit out of it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Dudoy, and then...
Thank you. Yes, I wish I were here 2 years ago, then I would have really also had a good laugh like now. But I think we must not be too unfair with our people here, because they are on the marketing side, and you've got to kind of create the market for products. But if you build a house on loose ground, you have a problem if you don't have the foundation. So I think the system, we need to have an argument, or not an argument, we have to have a debate about the system, the production system and a management system on the ground. Once we have established what is the size of a small unit, when is a person a subsistence farmer, when is he a small farmer, when does he become a semi-commercial farmer. I've seen a lot of these farms in my lifetime. So we've got to decide what is the minimum production in terms of money or tonnage or product before we can decide, well, how do we categorize these people, because we have to find out where this country is going. When we're talking about subsistence and small farmers, are we talking about guide for a tractor, or does he use the horse like my father used, and or is he going to share it with 5 people or 10 people or 20 people? We have to decide about that, because I think once we've got the production model and the management of that in place, then we can expect these people in front of us here to really perform. But I would not like to be in their shoes today, giving us a success on marketing, if you don't know what is the product and where it's coming from and how many farmers you've got to deal with. With the commercial side, I can understand. But with the small farmers, I think it's very difficult.
You can speak to me.
Oh, sorry. Chairperson, I did not hear anything 256 million yield I already said they are planning to raise it. I didn't hear anything. That was my question, or how, when. So they think.
You want to? Did you raise your hand?
No.
Okay. Can we quickly give a question?
I'll be quick. I had a slide that talked about levy money, and the way we do that is to say we know industries whose levy application are coming to an end. And those who are contemplating using statutory measures, who have been using voluntary measures for a while, we know as to how many of them are coming. So we know, in a sense, how many applications will come in the year. So when I say 250 million, it's based on our outlook on the sector and what the Act says the maximum amount you can collect per ton or per kg of product. So that figure is based on historical data as well as our outlook on production from those commodities who are coming to apply for statutory measures. So the safety it's not some suck. The issue might be whether those applications will be able to go through the system and gazette it before the end of the financial year or not. That's why we have 30 that will investigate, and we think we'll be able to gazette 20 out of those 30. But the 256 million, it's money that we help farmers in the industry raise, and it's spent according to guidelines that was provided. And I went through the guidelines in terms of a percentage that we spend on research, that percentage that we spend on information, consumer education, as well as transformation-related activities. So I hope that answers what you're looking for.
You can explain more than what we expect, but if those applications are not going through, it means what you are claiming here, it won't come to pass.
Yes, it's correct. If let's say for argument's sake, an industry comes up and applies for statutory measures and they don't have a credible body that will administer that, we're obviously not going to approve it, because we don't want to place public money into wrong hands. So we're not going to do that. However, based on the history we have, and based on the fact that the agricultural industry has been using these measures for like 15 years, there is some level of understanding as to how these things get done. So we are confident that those that will approve, those that will plan to do, will go through. the issue in terms of failed land reforms, I need to be careful as to what I say. We haven't been approached by anyone. We have taken a decision as the NNC to say that If we're expected to market the cultural products and we have no product coming through to market, then there is nothing I can tell you. So I need them to engage and work with my partners to integrate back and help some of the farmers to produce so that I have a product to sell. The challenge I have is that I'm not big enough for me to can do something that will have a meaningful impact in terms of 6 million hectares you have. It would be good if some of the bigger partners could request some level of collaboration, because they will have a lot more money, and some of the schemes and some of the programs we have can be expanded to have a much bigger impact. So for argument's sake, if I talk about the schemes program, that's a program that is funded by the ANC and industry. It would be good if government puts in a bit of money into them, because we can help a lot more farmers. Currently it's not happening, and something like that will help us in terms of growing the number of farmers who could have.
Shall I tell you that we are concluded with all the questions and the responses? So I'm just going through the budget here on the finance and admin. I'm not sure whether that will be explaining much, if anything, that could be done. I couldn't see any notes, if there are any. Those are small areas on administration, as it were. Given the fact that, you know, we are dealing here with the marketing council, of interest to me, typically if you are going to be talking about marketing, among others, you need to be traveling. I see here when it comes to traveling, there is no projected travel at all going abroad. I guess, you know, typically when people have, you know, to explain anything on budget, usually, why do you spend more? My point is, why are you not spending? You know? And I also see here that you're not projecting any bad debt. Maybe that will be answered by a question that talks about motor vehicle expenditure and private transport. As to whether those are, you know, I just need clarity. I can't reconcile all of those areas. That there is private motor vehicle, there is motor vehicle expenditure. I'm not able to reconcile if there could be some accounting measures being used here, so could just be explained.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of air tickets abroad or traveling expenditure for air tickets abroad, you said there is no budget that has been allocated under finance and administration. Our budget is divided in terms of programs. We've got, if you pay through, there are a lot of programs that have been indicated there, and then there is an allocation for air tickets abroad in each and every program except human resource and finance and administration. So there is budget for travel abroad so that our people can be able to interact with international, to do international travel. So in terms of bad debt, NAMC doesn't have a lot of debtors. I can say this, we don't have debtors. They are not like people who owe NAMC. What we have in the past, it was the staff loans that we were giving to our members of staff, of which we have discontinued to provide that in terms of the National Credit Act. We're not supposed to give staff loans to our staff. Yeah, basically that's it in terms of budget. We don't have, we didn't budget for budget because we don't have lot of, we don't have data in our organization.
No,
on the vehicle?
Okay, on motor vehicle expenditure, this budget is only for fuel and like the fuel on our cars that we have in our department. So that's basically that's it.
But I think maybe if I could add on that is that most of the work we do is not in Pretoria. So you find that people will in the country be flying, and then they will be hiring cars when they travel. In Pretoria, there are just a few cars, and what we've budgeted here, you find that it's small, simply because there are very few cars that hardly get used because there's no other cars in Pretoria.
Members, if there is no further question,
I'm just talking about the small one here because I haven't had time to look at the bigger one. On the strategic plan, page 38, I see the CEO, 3.5 million and 2.8. Is that the office or is that the salary or is it the division of what?
Okay.
Yeah, on the web service, yeah, I see didn't budget for that as well. Have you got any press service?
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
On the press service, there's no budget for that as well.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. In terms of the question that was raised in terms of CEO's budget, whether it was salaries or not, it includes salaries of all the staff in the CEO's office and all other administrative expenditure that are done under CEO's office. It's not the CEO's salary only. In terms of the bursaries, if you look at human resource budget, there is 50,000 allocated for bursaries for 2010-11 and 2011-12 up to 2012-13. Thank you.
Members, maybe at best, if we are going to approach this budget, given the fact that we have just received the documents, it would be to look into the consolidated budget, which therefore will unpack a number of areas into various programs. Mr. Jutta? Sorry, okay.
No, I'm glad to hear it's the office because if it was the salary, it would have been a quite a good salary for somebody who doesn't have 40 years experience in the wine industry. But I think we don't have a problem with the budget. We didn't have time to look at everything. It's not, but it's very well put out here. I think if we do have concerns, and we could address it at a later stage if there's a. I don't think this department or division has ever been before SCOPA, so far it looks good.
Yes, I just wanted to add to say that we propose to adopt the budget.
There's a mover. Are we happy exhausted? Are we all welcome, Mr. Nyalungu? Have you exhausted everything? I take it that no, from the members. There's a mover for adoption of the budget. I guess typically that move has to happen at a time when we are to do a report and all of those being done at that time. For now, it was more of a presentation. So we cannot therefore adopt anything. Safe to say that we should and can only thank members and also the team from Azkata Marketing Council for your time. Let's prepare ourselves in future for a presentation that takes an approach that looks in the main as we begin on priorities. How do we seek to approach, you know, a year to come? What is it that we want to achieve in succinct terms? Bullet point 1, 2, 3, 4. And also those must stick to the priorities of the land. Among others, you know, rural development, employment creation, growth of the economy, and so on and so forth. Education, health, and so on. Now those are the priorities we might wish to look into, broadly speaking. But of course, there are others that speak directly to the sector which we are in. We have covered very important areas, members, that we also need to follow on. Among others is a matter related to the cultural sector plan, something we might wish to look into. The industry players at the conference, among the things that we were referring to was this very sector plan that they are guided by as they move forward in their work in relation to government. And then those trusts, I would be very keen that we unpack them further. I hear also you talking about, you know, government and also, you know, industry, you know, trust. And government trust therefore having to have a minimal, you know, space in the equation. The issue for me is the role that government plays in those trusts and their accountability. And the regulations or laws that are governing those trusts. I hear you more about, you know, the trust deed has to be amended and so on and so forth. But the issue for me is a lot bigger than that. And the other one relates to the Marketing Act. As far as I remember, sometime last year, this issue has been in discussion. I'm just going through my notes here. Also, PPECB also has been engaging on this issue as well. So these are matters that we also need to look into. And of course, my very last one would relate to the Agri-BEE Charter, something that we seriously need to look into if we are going to grow the industry, especially transforming it. We need to seriously look into that one as well. I think in a nutshell, members, let's accept the report rather the presentation, and then thank the presenters and also thank all of us on this matter. You can leave us, we'll just do 10 minutes admin related work, and then at the most 10 minutes, and then we shall therefore break as a committee after that. Sorry that we took longer. Thanks. Let's manage it. Members, do you have copies of the program? If we could just start off with the program first. The 23rd of February until today, the 2nd of March, has been taken care of. 3rd of March, sorry. has been taken care of. We have a program in front of us here that is written program instead of draft program. The background to this as well speaks more to, among others, according to regulations, departments and agencies are expected, that report to Agriculture Prosecutor are expected to come before us before we do a report in the National Assembly. And also before we do the budget vote on the 13th of April. In other words, the report we are expected to present to Parliament has to happen before the 13th of April, in other words. What day specifically? 2 days before, 3 days before, what's the rule? Yeah, there's a 3-day rule on presenting of the report. If you go through our program as this term comes to a close on the 23rd of March before we go on recess. And then we come back what day? We come back on the 9th, yeah. In other words, from the 29th until the 29th of March until the 9th of April, it's a recess, or rather contingency period. So that's the broad framework under which we operate under. If you remember, we had agreed on a workshop of the 8th of another framework that we're operating under, which is really putting us, you know, on our back feet. All committees are given a slot. In other words, our committee meets only on Tuesdays. We had to force today because we had anticipated that we're going to do yesterday the workshop on money bills. And today we do what we had done yesterday with the Marine and Coastal Management. Having fought through that, they had agreed, but we still thought, let's make use of, you know, today and yesterday and do whatever is expected of us to do. Now we have such a draft program. Now, these are issues that are informing us. Now, that's the background. Number one, we have a report that we need to present before, as the rule says, 3 days before the budget vote, which is 13th of April. The second one relates to a requirement that we only meet on Monday and Tuesday. Now, the workshop planned, therefore, you know, couldn't go on, informed by that rule. And the other sessions following that also literally are confined to a Tuesday. That's the situation that we find ourselves in. Having said so, therefore, the draft program is presented to us. We can therefore engage.
Chair, I just see that on the 9th we've got 4 presentations, which, you know, in the time available, I really doubt it if we will be able to finish it. And then also the same on the 16th. Too, the land bank is normally a long discussion with the land bank and with on the support. Okay, on the support is not such a big problem. But the question is, and which I would like to maybe ask, the suggestion, if we cannot maybe next week use the Wednesday as well for one of these briefings, because or 2 of them, because we cannot really look at SAFCO and wine industry, the ARC, as well as the PPECB.
it's really a lot for one day. Otherwise, we will have to extend the time that we start, maybe 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning. It's just a question or a suggestion.
I hear you. If you also listened to me earlier on, to the postman, I was saying, with regards to Wednesdays, we are, you know, constrained by that rule that says our slot is on Tuesdays, which makes our life very difficult, to be quite frank, because, you know, you need to have been able to do all of these things before we break for recess or consequently period, which is 23rd of. See, the point raised there again on the 23rd of March is consider and adopt the committee report, which can be long, because it will take care of a number of these areas in terms of all these presentations that have been put to us. I hear your point about the 9th. Now, we also need to be a bit, you know, creative here. One other point was raised to whether or not we may not start at 8 o'clock, you know, so that we try and, you know, push as far as we can on some of the programs. Is there, just by way of, you know, curiosity, is there any other committee or other agency of government that reports to Agriculture and Foreign Fisheries that is not enlisted here? We've got Agriculture Research Council, PPECB, we've got SAFCO does not report to us. Let's also bear that in mind, and also Land Bank. But also, they have a direct, you know, link to what we are doing. Dr. Botner?
No, I was just thinking maybe the Competition Commission is not listed here.
Competition Commission, which is equally important, especially in relation to what we've just dealt with now. Another area that I thought members that we might wish to look into will be to get a report. I would imagine that one reports directly to us here on the Agri-BE Charter. I'm told there's a lot of wrong or bad things happening there. Having been inaugurated, if I'm not mistaken, January of last year, the only first meeting was in October of last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, just to help you correct you, not correct you, just information. There is a council appointed by the previous Minister of Agriculture more than a year ago. It was December, exactly a year ago, because I was also a member of that council. Apparently, they've only met once during this whole year. And I think maybe we should get them to come and report to us. The council, Agri-BE Council.
That's the sort of thing. I still remember though. Do we have any other entity, members? All what we're doing here, we simply are refreshing our minds, and I did ask the committee secretariat just to present to us a whole list of all those entities with the relevant acts that are governing them. But I'm sure we shall receive those in our pigeonholes before today or tomorrow, you know, council close. Okay. Now, there's a proposal for Tuesday that we start at 8 o'clock in the morning in order for us to see how we can push. Now, given all of what I was just saying, in relation to what committees report directly to us. SAFCOR is not one of those, Land Bank is not one of those. But as I said, these are equally agencies that are directly, that our committee is directly affected by, or the department is directly affected by. and their work.
Just a question, sir. I see that SACPOL is not directly, but what about the Department of Forestry? The Forestry Department. There should be a section within the Department of Agriculture that looks after the forestry sector. And they've got lots of things. They've got a charter as well, a forestry charter. We know nothing about it. They should come and report.
Yeah, but what you're trying to do now, you're trying to work thematically on a report at the end of the day that encompasses all the agencies and departments that are reporting to us here. So to be able to fit the deadline of the 15th of April when we are expected to do the budget debate. Your point is made about the culture in general, more specifically. I guess you are reminded more by SACPO here and coming here to us. Thanks. Okay, can I, if we are okay, why not a trust come directly here? In other words, we take away SACPO for a later date. Is that fine? Yeah, next week on Tuesday. We take away SACPO for that simple reason that it reports to public enterprise. We don't include that here. Though we have a definite interest in them coming here, but not immediately now. In other words, we plan to have them sometime in May when we come back. Is that fine? Which we will still have to conclude on. Okay? Agreed. In other words, we'll be remaining there with the 100 trucks, ARC, and the Perishable Product Export Control Board.
Just a point, not for taking it up now, but we are now looking, and I've made a point previously, on the trust. And we've only got the one trust here. You know, there are many trusts. Sometime in future, we will have to get feedback from them as well. Because they do a lot of work, and if we don't understand it, then we cannot realistically estimate the size of activities that are going on within all the trusts.
Thank you. I would wish us to have land bank as an exception in like you have in any rule an exception. The fact that they don't report directly to us, let us have them in the interest of our work and continued activity, and have them with that with OVP. Effectively, we are saying here our work comes to a close on the 23rd of March. Are we fine with this program until the 23rd of March? Okay. Let us also be mindful of the fact that during this period between now and the 23rd of March, we will be confronted with a responsibility of having to go through an exercise of having to appoint a board for ARC. What I would request you do, I had asked whether to circulate a memo to that effect. I'm not sure whether we did receive it, that we need to begin to think about people we can nominate to sit in the board of ARC. Did you receive that memo? Did you send it through? Yeah, that's 2 weeks ago. Anyway, there is that information that we need to generate on our own members of people potentially who could sit in the board of ARC. The law there stipulates that parliament must, I can't remember the exact wording, but parliament or committee of parliament must be involved in the process towards, you know, the appointment. only insofar as nomination of those prospective board members is concerned. It is only confined us just to a point of nominating, which again goes back to earlier problems that we had about a number of these other, including the National Agriculture Marketing Council, which does not even include us in that process of nomination of the board or the council. So we should just begin a process on our own, so that when that time comes, we don't start from scratch. So we now go until the 13th of April. We're coming back on the 9th of April. We're coming on the 9th of April, and then almost immediately that thereafter, the following week is going to be the debate. The 9th of April, is on a Friday. Okay, I'm with you now. Okay, in other words, we are expected here in Parliament on the 12th of April. Now, on the 20th, we thought of this whole issue of the stock theft.
Can we add to the police the border control?
Border control.
Yeah.